Hello and welcome to the Film Pulse Podcast. This is episode number 501. My name is Adam Patterson. With me today we got Kevin Rakestraw. Hey, Kevin.
Hi.
This week on the show, we're going to be taking a look at Dune Part 2. It's a big release. Big theatrical release for once.
Yeah.
We're also going to be going over this week's new releases in theaters, VOD, and Blu-ray. Thank you so much for joining us this week. If you could, consider reviewing us on iTunes. It'd be great. Hopping straight on in to Dune Part 2. This is directed by Denis Villeneuve. I have a synopsis here. Paul Atreides unites with Chani and the Fremen while seeking revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family. This stars a slew of people who I'm sure we'll get into as we get into the discussion here. Now, Kevin, I think we had a conversation earlier this year, and you were saying something about, like, you're like, it's going to take a lot to get me out in the theater. You were like, I think I'm pretty much done with theater, but this got you out there. So my first question is, like, how was your theater experience? How was it to get back in those seats?
Man, it was a long drive that I wasn't a fan of, and people suck. I'm not a fan of people. Like, there wasn't that many people in the theater, but people don't silence their cell phones.
Ugh.
People just like talking. Like, there's one at one point, I think one of the Harkonnen soldiers shoots one of their own, and they could. The guy, just loud as can be, is just, oh, he shot one of his own. It's just like, all right, bud, yeah.
That's what happened. We all saw it. We all saw it happen on the screen. The giant screen that we're all staring at.
It's like, all right, sure.
This was
there was one person in particular that, like, their breathing was the loudest breathing I've ever heard in my life. Like, they need to go to a doctor.
There's some concern there with the loud breathing.
Mm. Yes, 100%.
Okay. Well, it doesn't seem like it was. I mean, it seems like a pretty typical theater experience. It wasn't terrible. Then.
It wasn't terrible, but it was one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, this isn't that great actually.
I went to see it by myself actually because, we were in a new place. We don't have like a babysitter or anything like that, so. My wife took the bullet and was like, I'll stay back with the baby. You can go see it. And I was like, all right, that's fine. I don't like seeing movies by myself. This is only the second time I've ever went to see a movie by myself. It's a weird experience, but not one that I altogether hate. I don't hate going to movies by myself. It's like one of those things where once you get over that kind of hump of just feeling like this isn't something that you should do by yourself, like once you get over that, like it's kind of okay. Of course, I went, saw tons of movies by myself at festivals and stuff, but that was a little bit, that's yeah. Different. But yeah, like, so I knew I was going to go by myself. So the theater that I went to, they had reserved seating, and the theater itself had some of those seats that are just like two seats next to each other that are kind of off to the side that are like separate from, the rest of the seat clusters. So I picked one of those thinking like, oh yeah, this is a no brainer. I'll pick one of those two. Most other people going to see this movie are probably have go with multiple people. I'll be able to enjoy, sitting on my own. I don't have to sit next to anybody because I hate sitting next to strangers. But no, somebody picked the seat next to me. So I get into theater and there's somebody right there next to me, which made it more awkward because now it's like me and some lady in those two seats that are like by themselves. So it was even more awkward than, if it was just like in the regular section.
Hell yeah.
It wasn't like the theater was pretty full, but it wasn't like sold out or anything. Like there were some other empty seats and stuff around, which made it even like weirder. But I will say, to her credit, she was very quiet. She was not on her phone. She was very respectful. So not a bad, you know, seat
shout
buddy.
Out her. Yeah, shout out her.
Not yeah. I mean, the whole experience was not bad. I mean, it was an almost full theater, 1 o'clock on a Saturday, but people were, yeah, we didn't have any cell phone issues or loud people being disruptive or anything like that. So it was a pretty good experience for me.
Nice.
Getting back in there. So getting to the movie, I think that this is, you know, Dune Part One, came out during COVID, and if you remember, it went straight to HBO Max. So they didn't even release it in theaters. This was when Warner Brothers decided, like, you know, we don't know when movie theaters are going to open back up, so we're just going to put our whole roster out on HBO Max. And I got to say that this is, if there's any movie that you go see in theaters, like, this is the movie. Like, this is a movie that I think benefits greatly from a theatrical experience, just because of how absolutely stunning the visuals are and the sound, the visuals and the sound. Would you agree?
I would agree wholeheartedly.
So this one picks up pretty much exactly where the first one left off. Thankfully, I did have time to rewatch the first one because I pretty much forgot everything that happened in the first one, so it was really nice to get that refresher before going into this one. And I realized that, like, the Dune story is, like, not nearly as complicated as kind of what it seems on the outset. Like, it seems like it's a pretty complicated story with, like, lots of different houses and, like, politics happening and everything, but It's actually not as dense as what it seems. At least to me, it seems like.
Yeah, from my understanding, is the movie does a decent job of, like, condensing everything, because it sounds like in the book it's far more dense.
Yeah, which I don't know if I could handle. Like, I did see the Lynch Dune was as a kid. I haven't rewatched it as an adult, so, like, I really don't remember hardly anything out of the Lynch Dune, but I remember when I saw it as a kid, I just found it so unbelievably boring. And I remember, like, being concerned about this new Dune being the same thing, like, this is, like, some hard sci-fi type stuff here. I don't know, like, I used to be a Star Wars fan, but I just don't know if I can get into Dune. But, like, this is just such my jam. Like, this whole, both of these movies have just been so fantastic, and I absolutely love it.
I think we got ourselves a bone fine dude head.
Yeah, man. I mean, not enough to, like, want to read the book or anything. Like, I don't.
Oh, you're going to read this book.
Oh, no. Is it multiple books, or is it just one?
Dude, it's like six or seven books.
Is it? I thought it was like a lot of books. And they're, like, giant, aren't they? Like, the books are, like, super long.
I don't know if all of them are. I know the first one is fucking huge.
Yeah, that's the...
These two movies are just... They essentially encompass the first book.
Yeah, it's a pretty big world. I was thinking, like, as I was watching this, how this stacks up. Like... This Dune certainly surpasses all of the Star Wars, the prequels and the sequels to me. Like, this, like, the original trilogy, that's separate, but, like, the, you know, the prequel trilogy and then all the sequels, like, this, I feel like this does such a better job of world building and storytelling and everything than those new Star Wars movies. So much better.
Hell yeah.
Like, this movie's just...
I would agree. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I feel like this movie's just on another level. Like, you know, a good example is before the movie, I'm sure you probably... It's the same trailers. Did you see the trailer for the new Kong X Godzilla movie?
I'm I'm so glad you brought this up, because I was trying to like erase this from my memory. But that movie looks like the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
It looks
so bad. I told my wife, I think it's going to bring about the end times.
It looks like such utter dog shit. And I love Godzilla. I like King Kong. I don't think that there's not really enough, you know, in the Kong universe to say I'm like a fan necessarily, but I love Godzilla. And movie looks like such an absolute pile of excrement. Like it just looks like a freaking, you know what it looks like? It looks like a Transformers movie. It looks like a bad Transformers sequel. That's what it looks like to me. How he has like they gave him like the glove thing.
They upgraded his ass.
Are you kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? But the reason that I'm bringing that movie up is because like that's what we're mostly getting in the way of huge, you know, huge budget. Yeah. Big bombastic, like blockbusters, you know, popcorn films, movies like that. And it's like, it's such a bad time for those types of movies right now. Like all the Marvel movies suck now. Everything looks like shit from a visual standpoint, like cinematography, special effects, all of it looks like absolute garbage because Hollywood can't seem to figure out that if you pay animators a fair wage and give them enough time to actually, you know, explore or express their talents, that you can actually get, you know, good stuff out of it. It seems like studios would rather just like shit out whatever they can to just make a few dollars. Yeah.
But I also feel like they missed the point in terms of, I think they don't realize like how simple audiences can be. Because I think like for me, and I'm sure you probably agree, but and I've seen other people say this, like some of the most stunning things in Dune is just like when the people float down, like the Harkonnens float down.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, this is cool as shit. I fucking love it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, there are artistic ways of showing things that don't necessarily have to be huge budget, you know, giant set pieces and stuff like that. Like, I'm sure that Kong versus Godzilla or Kong X Godzilla movie or whatever cost, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to make. In comparison to like Godzilla Minus One, and you look at Godzilla Minus One, and that movie, I bet, just runs circles around this Godzilla X Kong movie as far as like from a visual standpoint and every other aspect too, I would imagine.
Yes.
And yeah, like, yes, Dune Part Two, this is a movie that has a $190 million budget, which is absolutely massive. Like, there's no doubt about it. This is a huge, huge movie. But the thing is, you see that on the screen. And this is all stuff that I've said about the first one when we talked about the first Dune, is that, like, the set pieces, the costuming, yes, the special effects, the practical effects that are in use here, like, it's all done so meticulously, and there's so much detail in every scene. And you compare that to one of these Marvel movies that has a budget that's, you know, within the same amount, and it's all just done on a green screen, and it looks like an absolute pile of crap in comparison. Like, there is absolutely nothing that is even close to this movie from, like, a big, you know, big action sci-fi blockbuster type, you know, within that genre. Like, it's just, this is, like, in a whole other level. And I hope that this is successful to the point that it lights a fire under some of these big studios to be like, okay, yeah, we need to like kind of go back to the drawing board. Because if you think about it, if you look at like Empire Strikes Back, for instance, you know, a lot of people are saying that Dune Part 2, they're kind of drawing comparisons between this and The Empire Strikes Back, you know, the second Star Wars. When you look at that movie, like, that's a movie that had, yes, it had a huge budget as well, and that was a movie that also was filled with meticulous set pieces and everything like that. So it's not like movies like this didn't exist in the past. It's just that they don't anymore, and everything is just so lazy now that when you see a movie like this, you're just like, holy shit. Like, this is how movies used to be.
Now, question for you, though, because we talked about this a little bit off air, you know, yesterday, back and forth. Is there anything in this movie, Dune Part 2, that you would criticize, though? I'm interested to hear what your criticisms could be, if there are any.
I think one of the sticking points that you had with this was more on the performance level of things.
I've had some other things too. Thinking about, you know, the further I get away from it, the more time I get to spend thinking about it. There's other things, but there's one performance thing in particular.
I have very few criticisms with this. It's hard to fully criticize this movie because it's a part two, and it started off exactly where the first one ended, so it doesn't really have any kind of like introduction. It just kind of picks up, and then also the way that it ends, I'm not going to give anything away, but I think most people know this isn't the last one, so it ends much like the first one, where it just sort of it's like a cliffhanger ending almost. Yeah. So I think that there are some criticisms that I'll probably have to reserve until, you know, the whole saga is over. But yeah, I don't really have much to say about it in a negative manner. I think that even minor gripes and quibbles that I would have with it, like, you know, Timothée Chalamet's performance or something, it really wasn't enough to fully like pull me out of it or even detract from the overall experience for me.
Mm.
But what were your hangups? I mentioned Timothée Chalamet. You're not a Chalamet guy. You're just not a Chalamet guy.
No, and well, I shouldn't say that. I think that my biggest issue with Chalamet is he's too of the moment. Like, he's too like modern. Like, I can't, like, when if he's in this or say like a period piece, like, I just can't believe it. He doesn't sell it to me. And in particular, Dune, I think his acting is just bad. It's just bad.
Go ahead.
It's not that big of a deal to me. It's just there's times where when he's doing like this self-serious shit, where you're just like, oh, come on, man. Like, you can do better than this.
I think the interesting thing for me with this series is that I don't think that Paul is like, I don't think that he is, he's the main character, obviously, but he's like one of the least interesting things about this whole story to me. Like, I actually really don't give a shit about Paul. I don't really care about Paul Atreides. I am more invested in just this world, and you know,
because I gotta say, I can't wait for I hope that the Fremen kill Paul. Just kill him. Just get him. Kill him.
I'm not sure that's.
Just kill the guy.
I don't know if that's gonna happen, but I mean, I don't. I don't remember what happens in the Lynch one.
Oh, you wouldn't cheer for that?
I would not cheer for it. I would, you know, if the Fremen were like, you know what? Like,
yeah, I get you.
Well, I mean, especially what happens in this one. Again, I'm going to try to avoid spoilers, but there, you know, there's some there's some developments that occur, you know, prophecies being foretold and all of that stuff.
Yeah,
where
that's what I mean, where you're just like, yeah.
If you didn't like him before, you're really not going to like him now. Like, he gets less likable as the movie progresses, and I think that, that's obviously by design. That's just where his character goes. Again, you know, kind of drawing comparisons to Empire, this one is... It's a little bit of a downer, I would say. Like, there are a lot of things about it that feel kind of ominous, you know, by the end of it. Some good things certainly do happen. And like, you know, obviously the big battle that occurs in the final act of this one, which is absolutely insane. I mean, there's some just truly jaw-dropping moments in this.
Oh yeah. This and I movie. Will say that before I get into any of my other criticisms, I will say before I get into that is like all the action stuff in this movie is just spectacular. Like I don't know if it could be better, honestly.
It just the looks only other, so good.
Yeah, it looks so good. And just the scope of it, the size of it, the scale, like everything just perfect. Just about. The only other criticisms that I have, filmmaking-wise, really, is the vision stuff.
Ugh.
Looks like absolute garbage.
I didn't like that in the first one. Yeah, I don't like it in this one either.
And I don't know what it is about. Like, first one, I was like, okay, this isn't whatever. But the second one, I was just like, this is fucking amateur hour. This looks god-awful. And the baby stuff, or I shouldn't say the baby stuff, the fetus stuff. Just looks fucking even worse than the vision stuff. Stupid as hell. I'm sorry.
I could have probably done without that.
But that's the other thing. Like, you don't need, like, okay, the vision stuff, I understand. Like, you kind of need potentially a visual representation of that. The fetus stuff, you don't need it. Like, she can just talk to her stomach.
And it happens a lot. You know, like, there are a lot of scenes where she's, you know, interpreting or translating what the fetus is telling her.
It works perfectly fine. That was just one of those things where I'm like, I don't understand why you're...
Yeah, I could have done without that, too.
Don't have to do this.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about that stuff, and it is... I mean, it's okay. Like, nah, yeah, I definitely could have done without that.
And a lot of the close-ups, a lot of the close-ups look like garbage.
I'm trying to think of, like, any...
There's just a lot of, like...
There were a lot of close-ups...
Chalamet just, like, close up on his face, you know?
Yeah.
He's trying to be serious.
Well,
he's
just trying a lot of close-ups on Austin Butler's character, too, Fade Rotha, or whatever.
And those are shit too. All the close-ups are shit. They're bad.
I was a little concerned about Austin Butler because, much like how you feel about Chalamet, I feel the same way about Austin Butler. I think that dude is kind of ridiculous.
It can't because he's at least in this movie. He's at least being a freaky little guy. Like, this is a freaky little world.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, I was just fully expecting him to just be Elvis again and just you know, just the pure white, the milky white version of Elvis. But he actually does some, you know, he does some stuff in this. He doesn't act like,
yeah, he's a freak.
He doesn't act like Elvis. So I was really happy. I'm in the middle of watching that Masters of the Air, or I guess I'm caught up in watching that Masters of the Air show, and he's in that too, and he's just kind of Elvis again. And that new that new Jeff Nichols movie, the biker one, he looks like he's going to be Elvis in that too. So
he just can't stop being Elvis.
No, he's just
the only way you can break him of Elvis is to just turn him into a little freak,
a little white psychopath, a little pure white psycho, killing people and drinking their blood and doing all kinds of weird that whole house or whatever they are.
Yeah, they're fucked up.
They do such weird stuff, man.
Just a bunch of freaks.
They did a bunch of weird stuff in the first one, too. And they doubled down on the weird, creepy stuff in this one. Mm-hmm. A lot of gross, oily fluids getting squirted everywhere. I gotta say, I loved the visual of the, like, oil fireworks, though. Like, during the the kind of, like, gladiator scene.
I'm glad you brought that up. The ink blots.
Yeah.
Essentially, yeah, the fireworks are like ink blot. I like that.
Yeah,
that's a cool idea.
Much like the first part, I think that the sound design is something that is worth talking about almost as much as the visuals, because the sound in this movie is so good. Like the thumpers and just like the sound of like just everything, like so much detail is put into the sound effects and the sound design in this. And it's just such a, it's so incredible. It really is.
I do. And I think I've mentioned this before, but I would like, you know, blockbuster, big movie, action type movies. I hope someone gets away from that sound.
Like the horn, like the boom, that sound.
Yeah. It's in everything now.
I think that was like a Hans, was that a Zimmer thing? I think that started as a Hans Zimmer thing.
Well, he does the music here too.
Yeah. I mean, the score's good.
The score's good, but it's just that sound is starting to get a little played out.
It's a bit played out. I'll agree with that. I love all of the, like, the sound effects, like the just. Some of the sounds that you hear in this movie are just so unique, and like the sound of the, what are they called? The thopters, the flying things. Yeah. Like the sound of those things, and just, it's wild. It is a wild movie. It's impressive to me that a movie like this, which is a very, again, like a pretty hard sci-fi type story.
I mean, it is kind of wild to think about it, that this is like a big,
huge mainstream
spectacle.
Like the theater I was in had like all walks of life, you know, in this theater, like soccer moms in this theater. Like, it's wild to me that you have soccer moms excited to be checking out Denis Villeneuve's latest Dune Part 2. Like, it's just so wild.
Yeah. I mean, mine wasn't that packed, but it was all people older than me. And man, they were amped for some Dune. I mean, not amped enough to turn off their phones.
Well, no. Yeah.
But
that'd be asking way too much.
That is way too much.
Finally get to see the Emperor in this one, played by Christopher Walken. And
terrible.
You mean, like, he did a terrible job?
Yeah, it's just dumb. No. Get someone else to do that.
I mean, he didn't really have much to...
Exactly.
Well, he might be... Like, that's the thing, is, like, you have to imagine that he's probably going to play a bigger role later.
If he survives that long.
Yeah.
Which I don't...
No, he's not going to survive that long.
Looking at the guy, he's going to be dead. It's like 3 years.
Florence Pugh's in this one, who is the princess, so... She's the daughter of the Emperor.
See, that's a good idea, because she'll be around.
I loved that that costume that she had, the like chainmail looking thing.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. Leah Seydoux is in this one. I imagine that she'll be maybe in a bigger part later.
Gotta be.
Because she doesn't... Like, they make a pretty big deal about introducing her and stuff, but like she just kind of disappears.
Well, she has the baby, so
I don't know.
Watch out, got that Harkonnen baby.
The Harkonnen baby. Butler. Harkonnen Austin baby. Butler.
Yep.
Pretty much everybody from the first one, you know, comes back. Stellan Skarsgård, of course, reprising his role as Baron Harkonnen. Gross schlub with the crazy, like, spinal contraption thing floating around, being gross. Charlotte Rampling has a has a bigger role in this as the
yeah.
Reverend Mother.
Bene Gesserit.
Bene Gesserit.
They're doing all sorts of stuff.
They're scheming, man. They're
fucking scheming.
They're wheeling and right dealing. They're
scheming.
They're up to no good.
They got feelers everywhere, scheming all over the planet.
Yeah, spies. They're running the show.
I would say the one thing that I do like, but this is also a weird thing to me, especially in this movie in particular, Javier Bardem's character, right? He's the only one that's bringing like some levity. Like yeah. He's having fun, right?
Yeah.
They're doing a revolution, you know, but he's having a good time. He's laughing. He's cracking jokes, but everyone else is so fucking serious.
Yeah. It's funny.
It ends up being like this weird juxtaposition.
It's funny. I'm glad you brought that up because I was thinking about this too. And I was like, endlessly, as I was watching this, I was thinking about, like, you know, comparisons to other big, like, sci-fi operas, like Star Wars. And I was like, what is this missing that Star Wars has? And I was like, well, one is a cast of characters that is, like, you instantly latch onto those characters. Those characters are memorable characters. And I just don't think... And it's not this movie. It's just Dune in general. I think it's just the general source material. I don't think that the characters are particularly noteworthy. Like, you don't really latch onto them the same way you do, like, Han Solo or Luke Skywalker, you know? And then the other thing is just the levity, as you mentioned. Like, the first part did have some like... little quips here and there. This one, no. This is dead serious, except for Javier Bardem, as you mentioned, who is a very different character in a lot of ways in this one, as opposed to what he did in the first part. Because in the first part, if you remember, he was like, really serious. He was just a super serious mm-hmm. guy who didn't trust Paul or his mom, and like, he was just very wary of everything. And then by this one, he's just 100% sold. And he's a fanatic in this one.
Oh man. He's the fucking, the head of the fucking Paul Atreides fan club.
Yeah.
He's losing his shit. He's just like, oh God damn. There he is. There's the savior, the Messiah.
His character just takes a complete 180. Which I liked it. I liked the goofiness he brought to it. And I do wish there was a little bit more of that in this. I think that it is a movie that takes itself a little bit too seriously, which is unfortunate. Because, you know, I will say, as much as you hate Timothy Chalamet, like, he can do comedy. Like, he can make it work. Like, he was funny on SNL.
See, that's the thing. Like, he's been good in other things. It's not like I dislike him as an actor overall.
Oh, okay.
Because he's been good in things. Mm-hmm. I just, like, in Dune, he just doesn't work for me in Dune. Like, he's too serious. He's too, like, just...
how much of that is the character, though? Like, how much of it is just Paul Atreides?
And that's what I don't know. Because there is a part of me that wonders, like, if it wasn't Chalamet, how would I feel about this? If we had someone else here, what would my thoughts be?
If it was like, I'm trying to think of who else it would be. Tom Holland seems a little bit too...
And, yeah, I don't know.
I don't think Tom Holland would work. Tom Holland's a little bit too... I don't know what the word would be. For him, he needs to be a little bit more chiseled, a little bit more gruff. I'm not sure who it would be, because you'd probably need to get someone around the same age as Chalamet, you know, a younger person.
I think it's Chalamet's sulking in this movie just doesn't work for me at all. And then when he gets like serious, it's like, I don't believe you. I just don't.
Chani deserves so much more.
She does. She does, you know? Glad you said it.
We were all thinking it.
God damn. Yeah.
Yeah. So anything else you want to add? This is a movie I can't recommend enough. Obviously, if you haven't seen the first one, check that out before going to see this one.
Just go straight.
I don't know why. I'm sure there are people who start off with this one. I imagine it'd be a very bad time for you if you did not see the first one and went into. I would recommend rewatching the first one actually before going into this one.
Dude, you can figure it out. It's not that hard. His dad died. He got killed. He wants revenge. Like,
they all want the spice.
Yeah, you gotta have the spice.
You need the spice.
Trying to collect that spice, fucking blow the shit up. Like, it's not rocket science.
All of those scenes, like the sandworm riding scene, the ambushing the
the resistance stuff, I fucking love.
Oh my god,
the worm stuff I thought was kind of weird, just the way that it progressed because it was like riding worms.
Well, and then all of a sudden they're like their pets. They were like
everyone's fucking riding worms. They're using them as public transportation. I'm a deal to ride a worm. Like, how are you loading up?
I don't know. They showed Chani do it, where she just throws down a thumper and then one, like, shows up.
I know, but then they showed one where it's like, there's, like, 90 people on a worm.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I saw how Paul did it. Like, how are you guys packing your stuff on top of this worm?
It's not like it stops, you know? It's not like it just stops and waits for everybody to get on. And then, like especially...
The worm's like, are you guys good?
Yeah, especially when they all went south and there was like,
It was just a bunch of
like the mom and there was like, they had like tents and shit like that. They moved all of their stuff on the worms.
Yeah. That's what I meant. Whereas like, the worm is a big deal. And then later I'm like, it's not a big deal at all. It's fucking Amtrak.
Yeah. That's their public transportation.
Ridiculous.
That first sandworm scene though was really,
Hell yeah.
That was incredible. And the mines, I loved when they brought Josh Brolin back, and when they went after that one, and they had those mines that were like magnetic, so cool. Yes. Oh my god, the thing. Like, this movie just has so much cool shit in it that almost every scene you could be like, oh man, remember this scene when they did, you know, when they were like that slow motion burning the corpses with the flamethrowers and it.
And that's a good point, because even some of my criticisms is this movie is so big and they're doing so many things. Like, yeah, not all of it's going to be great. And I can't expect all of it to be great, but a large majority, very good.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I love this movie. Wholeheartedly, I actually want to go back to the theater. I want to see it again for the first time. I thought that this was absolutely incredible. Let's give it a score. Here's a score that you're going to be surprised about, Kevin. Well, maybe not. I haven't given a score this high in quite a long time. It's not a 10. It's not. We're not going 10 territory here, so don't get your hopes up there. But this is a 9.5 for me. It is almost there. Wow. This is going to be tough to beat for my favorite movie of the year.
Gotcha. And I had to, like, I feel bad because you're like 9. I'm like, you're 9.5. You're all excited. And then I'm going to just come in and be like, yeah, it's 7.
It's average movie. Seven. Just an average, you know, it's nothing big.
Seven's not average. Seven is a good score.
It's a little bit above average, yeah. It's a little bit of above average movie. Okay.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing. Now, I will say, it's a hard... I don't know if that helps. I don't think it does, but whatever.
You know what? As long as you had a good time, as long as you found yourself entertained with the movie, that's fine by me.
I did. There was parts where I was bored out of my fucking mind. But
I thought that this compared to the first one, I thought that there was a lot more going on,
Yeah,
like action wise,
which is interesting. Because I do feel that way, but at the same time, it's just a weird movie, because at the same time, like, it was more boring than the first one, but there was also more happening than the first one, which is weird.
Maybe it's just because the first one, there was so much new, like you were being introduced to this world for the first time.
And I think,
so there were so many things that you're seeing for the first time, and whereas in this one, it's a continuation, so a lot of the stuff we've seen before.
I know this world.
Yeah, like we know about the flying things, and we know about the thumpers and the sandworms and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, let's take a look at what we have in theaters this week. Ricky Stenicki is going to be in theaters. It's a comedy with John Cena and what's his name? Zac Efron.
It's bizarre because this doesn't look like a real movie.
No, it looks terrible. Looks absolutely terrible to me.
I
don't know. I don't know what to say about this one. Love Lies Bleeding is also going to be in theaters.
Oh, nice.
This one I'm excited for, yeah. Cabrini. We got Imaginary. That's the Blumhouse horror movie. I think those are the major theatrical releases. On VOD, let's see. Starting with the 5th, we have Before I Change My Mind. We got The Troubles, A Dublin Story. Then on the 7th, Ricky Stenicki is going to be on Amazon Prime. I don't know if that's like a premium, like if you get to rent it. I would imagine if it's going to be in theaters also, but who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
It says Prime on the thing, so
it's going to hand it out for free.
Yeah, I think that might be what's happening. I think they're just dumping it.
It's probably a good idea.
Then on the 8th, we got the Longest Goodbye, we got American Dreamer, let's see what else. HBO Max is getting Wonka.
Wonka?
Wonka. Frogman, gonna be on VOD. Damsel is gonna be on Netflix. The Pipers, A Deadly Tune, Sing a Deadly Tune. That looks like that's pretty much it for VOD. Blu-ray this week, we got The Man Who Shot Liberty Vance from 1962, Over the Edge from 1979, Brawl in Cell Block 99 is getting a 4K release, Moon Garden. Got the Long Riders from 1980. Mayhem is getting a Steelbook release in 4K. I liked Mayhem. That was a cool movie. It was fun. Saw 10 Film Collection 2004 to 2023.
Goddamn.
Has a lot of Saws. But I think it's still missing some. Maybe not. Maybe is Jigsaw in this one? Or Spiral? Oh no, it does have Spiral. And Jigsaw. So it's like the whole shebang. Doesn't make sense to me. How is it only 10 movies? If Spiral is included, shouldn't it be 11?
I don't know. Gonna have to do the math on that.
Got Saw 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Saw the Final Chapter, which is 7.
Mm-hmm.
Jigsaw. The
Final Chapter, number 7.
Yeah. Jigsaw, which I guess is 8. Oh, okay, so Spiral, I guess, is considered the 9th one, and then there's Saw 10, which is the recent one. Okay. Huh. Never knew that.
Wonderful.
Got the 355 coming out in 4K. Shivers from 1975 getting a Steelbook edition. This is, looks like it's, is this the Vestron? Yeah, this is the Vestron, collector series. I'm a fan of Shivers. I like Shivers a lot. Prisoners of the Ghostland. That's the Shin Sono one with Nicolas Cage. Children of the Corn, the 2021.
Stop it.
Awful. We'll say that's it. What do we got on Criterions this week?
We got none.
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 Actually kind of a pathetic week, if I'm going to be honest.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Come on, March.
This is not a great week for releases.
March is weak. Off to a weak start.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm the only one I'm interested in is Love Lies Bleeding.
Yeah.
There's really, I'm like kind of just going back through here, and there's really just nothing, like nothing else that I'm even remotely interested in. I mean, Imaginary, I'll probably check out just because it's a new horror movie, but all right. Oh, anyway.
There you go.
I think that's going to do it for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can send us your questions and topics to podcast@filmpulse.net. And if you have a moment, consider reviewing us on iTunes. That'd be great. For Kevin Rakestraw, my name is Adam Patterson. We'll see you next week.